Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coda has a new way to pay. Now you can use the Transit mobile app to plan, track, and pay for your Coda ride. For a limited time, everyone who creates a Coda account in the Transit app will get a $4.50 credit. What are you waiting for? Download the Transit app today.
Welcome back to the Cosmology and Science Podcast. My name is Richard and I'm your host today. And in this episode, we're going to talk about the latest book from Richard Dawkins. At least it's a book from 2019, which is called Outgrowing God, A Beginner's Guide. So it's a shorter book. It's about 200 pages plus. And we just wanted to go through the first chapter. We've been reading it and just some of our presumptions about what the book is going to be like, and also the argument that he starts laying out from the beginning. And also just to frame the whole thing, we really like Richard Dawkins in many ways because he's very funny. He's an excellent writer. He's also charming and his science is really good. But there is something about the conclusions that he's making that is sometimes a bit questionable, and it's also something about how he relates to language and how he uses some of these terms and defines things, and this is what we're going to get into. So we're going to start with some of our presumptions about Richard Dawkins and then what this book is going to be like. So we just want to have this one starting point that, first of all, with science, there are two things, at least, that science cannot explain, which is consciousness, and another thing is the beginnings. What came before the Big Bang? If we take that as the current paradigm, what is before the Big Bang? And if people say, well, it emerges out of a quantum flux of some wave functions and so on, then you're just pushing the question backwards. Like, but where did these wave functions come from in the first place? So those two areas are just in the back of my mind when you're reading it, like as examples of where science have like the boundaries of science. And those two areas are very big areas. So another presumption is that Dawkins is not fully understanding all the variety and depth of theology and the big traditions, maybe because he's not interested in it. So, but we're gonna make the argument more when we start looking at the first chapter. So it's either he's not understanding it, or he's pretending not to understand it. He's not willing to go along with what, let's say, the Greek church founders, who were Hellenistic philosophers, were trying to express symbolically and philosophically with their theology and how they interpreted and incorporated and integrated the biblical stories and their symbolic wisdom into more like a philosophical framework. So those are some of them. And then we also have other things that we'll see will happen. We have this Dante stuff in the background as well, that the story of Ulysses, in one of the stories in Inferno, Ulysses drowns because he tries to sail towards he wants to grab the whole world rationally, and thereby he ends that journey at the boundaries of rationality, but there is much more beyond that. So we're going to see if that fits into the presentation that Dawkins is doing. And then we're also going to see another hypothesis here, that his conclusion about, or his seemingly certitude that there's no divinity, there's no transcendent mystery that we don't know about, is at a base level a conviction he has. It's not the end of a rational argument. It is a conviction, or if you will, a faith in itself. The rationality will bring you to the agnostic position, and then If you then conclude that there is nothing beyond that, that is a conviction. That is a hypothesis that we're going to see if it's going to work. Okay, so then the first chapter is also a fantastic little walkthrough of mythology and religious figures and different traditions. He starts with the first chapter is called So Many Gods. You have the Thor with a hammer. It's a very fun and just like a humorous illustration. And then he starts with these questions. Do you believe in God? Which God? And then he starts making this argument about all the different gods and why would you believe in one and not the other? And there are so many things at once here, but there is a difference between the Greek mythology and the Hebrew concept of divinity. So it's just, if you try to explain some of this, there's something about, if you read the beginning of the biblical stories, it starts with Elohim, who's the term. This is the first sentence in the Hebrew of the name of the divinity. It's a concept that means all the spiritual beings and the source of all the spiritual beings. And then later with Moses, you get the full name, which is then in Hebrew is this Yahweh Tetragrammon, which means existence. So it goes from being the source of all the spiritual being to be existence in itself. That is the concept of the divinity in the old biblical stories, which is different from Zeus, when he talks about Zeus and Thor, because they are characters in mythological stories. They're not, like, Zeus is not a symbol of existence, but the Jewish divinity is. So there's something about, he's also making the argument that, like, monotheism is more simplistic in some sense, but there is, it aims deeper, like it aims at the source of mythology in itself. So that's something that, if you don't look at that part of the argument, then what he's writing is kind of very to the point and convincing, but there is a difference that he's kind of omitting in this presentation, in our view. So that is that kind of puts the first 3-4 pages into a bit of like yes but framing. He makes some great arguments or attacks on specific things in specific traditions. I'm not going to go into the details, but there is a big difference between arguing against God in itself or a divinity and then start to go into specific inconsistencies in the different religions. Because if you try to go along with what the old theology or like just theism in itself, like having some idea about something transcendent or like something like a creator, is very different from being committed to one of the big religions. So it's just like having that flexibility as well would help if it was a part of Dawkins' argument that you could be to some extent a theist and think that there is something beyond our understanding, have a bit of humility in terms of that we don't know, without having to answer for specific things in the religious stories in the different branches of the Abrahamic religions or any of the other ones. So, and we are saying this just because it could often be a very helpful thing for a clear thinking, and a bit of humility is to just not concluding and kind of shutting the door and saying that this is what we know and there is nothing beyond it. So that is another thing that would nuance the debate a little bit. Yeah, and then he also talks about agnostics. Just want to put the definition of agnostic might also be helpful. It's also when he talks about atheist, there will always be a debate what that word means. Because agnostic is the position. So the definition with the Oxford Dictionary is an agnostic is a person who believes that nothing is known and can be known of the existence or nature of God. A non-religious definition is having a doubtful or non-committal attitude towards something. Gnostic in itself means relating to knowledge, especially esoteric mystical knowledge. And it comes from the Greek word gnostikos, or gnostos, meaning known. So Gnostics were like a separate ideology in a sense, or belief, but then agnostic is connected to that. But there is, Dawkins sometimes insists on defining the words on his own terms. It's like he's saying that an atheist is not someone who is dismissing gods. He just said there are those who don't believe in it. But that is not really how what the word means. If you don't think so, but you're not sure, then you would be more in the agnostic position. That you don't know, you doubt it, but you don't know. Atheism is to conclude that there is nothing. That is kind of how those categories work. So if he puts it into like that he's not sure, but he thinks it's not likely, and then he says he's an atheist, and saying that that's because he's not convinced that there is something, then he is, again, an agnostic. But this is a part of the whole debate. There is a linguistic problem, a very big linguistic problem in this debate in itself. Also because when he uses the word God, there is so many definitions and there's so many disagreements of what it means. And then it would be helpful to go back and look at what they were thinking in the ancient world and also the first centuries with the Greek church founders, kind of the earliest Orthodox tradition would also be very, very helpful in this aspect. So he has a couple of fun metaphors here. So he's also quoting Einstein, which is interesting. So that is, he says that some agnostics would say that my God is the deep mystery of everything we don't understand. That is, and then it continues, the great Albert Einstein used the word God in pretty much this last sense. So that is kind of the agnostic position, but you are a bit fascinated by the things we don't know, and also being a little bit acknowledging that it is there, that there is a mystery about existence and life and being in itself. So, but then he keeps going on to saying and this is a very it's a good claim, and he's presenting it in a humorous way again. So, you know, the China teapot metaphor. So, quoting, the philosopher Bertrand Russell made the point with a vivid word picture, saying that, right before, it's impossible to prove that something does not exist. So atheists cannot prove that there are no gods. So the quoting here is that Bertrand Russell said, if I were to tell you that there is a China teapot in orbit around the sun, you cannot disprove my claim. And then that, in that sense, everybody would be teapot agnostics towards that claim. But in practice, we are a-teapotists. So we are concluding that, or we are using the term again like that, because we are so sure that there's not a teapot circling around the sun, and then you conclude it. So there is a little bit there of acknowledging that there is a kind of a probability evaluation in kind of where you put yourself and how you label your own assumption or belief or conviction. So those are the main things. There's also something to say about he also concludes that, or he left his belief when he was around 15, he said, because at that point he concluded that if he had been born with Viking parents 1,000 years ago, he would believe in the Norse gods, and then it's all down to where you are born. There is something again to say about how you approach the whole topic of divinity and some sense of belief and faith, that there could often be something deeper that is expressed in different ways in different cultures, in part because people are different. So they, like, different peoples across the planet have different architecture, have different, they like different things often, and then they have different literature and kind of storytelling traditions, and therefore the expression of the religious will also be different. That is at least an important part of acknowledging or kind of appreciating that there are different versions. But that is again a secular argument, because those. So in that sense, he has a point with that attack. But again, that is the attack on the specific expression of religious beliefs and traditions. It's not, in that sense, a kind of coherent attack on theism in itself. So those were some of the main points. We're going to keep this one a bit short. There's also this one thing, we had one more note here, which is just to have a sense of how much, since he talks about the religious side of life for people, there's such a vast difference from having people who walk around who are just a little bit open to maybe there is a mystery beyond our understanding, to people who are very, very convinced about something, and people who are also doing worship and are very strongly, actively doing the practice of religion. So that is yet another aspect into this whole debate. And since Dawkins is broad brush and wants to kind of grow beyond and put the whole God thing or concept behind us, we're going back to the same point here, that he is in some ways attacking specific expressions, and also to a large extent, which is coming a little bit in the beginning here, that it is his also Anglican Protestant upbringing and background that much of this critique fits that specific background in itself. So those are just some of the loose thoughts. We don't have any conclusions. It's a very enjoyable book to read. It's a fun read, and it's delightful. Some of the humor, sentences and some of the examples he is making. Okay, so we're going to stop this one here. We're going to go back to reading more and then sharing some thoughts about this, and then also how our initial presumptions about the whole book, how this will kind of, if it will turn out to be somewhat right, somewhat wrong, totally wrong, or which ones will turn out to be kind of applicable and relevant for the book. Okay, so with that, just going to say, hope some of this was interesting. We so far really recommend the book, Outgrowing God, A Beginner's Guide by Richard Dawkins. So thank you so much for listening, and see you again in another episode.
It's not too late to make someone's holiday season a special one. Start now as an Amazon Delivery Station warehouse associate to earn some extra money for the holidays. You'd help bring joy to thousands near you by preparing packages and loading them up for their final delivery. With night and early morning shifts available through the new year, you'd also have the flexibility to spend time with your loved ones. To start as a Delivery Station associate, go to amazon.com/holidaywork. Amazon is a proud equal opportunity employer.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.